Talon's Out Honor Flight is the Lower Peninsula hub for the National Honor Flight Network. Talon's Out flies area veterans of World War II, Korea, and Vietnam to Washington, D.C. for one last mission. That mission? To visit their memorials and receive the honor they so richly deserve. WKHM was approached by American One Credit Union, a Talon's Out corporate sponsor, to serve as a community guardian for a veteran on a recent trip to D.C. I was fortunate enough to be the lucky person to be selected from our team to make the trip and meet a veteran named Bob that I would have had the honor of accompanying. Bob Berger is a quiet, humble man from the city of Plainwell, just a quick drive north up US 131 from Kalamazoo. Easter Sunday marked his 87th birthday. Since 1956, he's been happily married to his wife, Sally, a wonderfully poised woman who Bob refers to as his bride, even to this day. He's an Air Force veteran who reached the rank of staff sergeant, serving for 4 years starting in 1952. In January of 1954, he was sent to Korea near the DMZ during the armistice as an early warning radar operator. He would return home in December of 1955, serving out the remainder of his time at Fort Custer. I would exchange emails back and forth with Bob, getting to know him as our flight date approached. I wasn't sure what to be prepared for, as the training had already readied us for the worst. Traveling to the Air Zoo in Kalamazoo, I would spend 3 hours learning about the program and some very basic training on what to look for medically with our elderly wingmen. Following our training, there was only one step left before our flight: the meet and greet dinner the night before we take off. Most of the veterans on our flight were heading out with family, so the meet and greet for them was an opportunity for the veterans to talk, share stories, and become a band of brothers some 70 years removed from combat. For Bob and I, and other community guardians assigned to unknown soldiers, it was a chance to finally connect, share a meal, and learn what was going to be important to them during their flight. During the dinner, the volunteers welcomed everyone and got the veterans sharing stories, telling jokes, and just having a great time around people who shared their experiences. It was great to see so many of these heroic men and women opening up and telling a group of strangers stories they may have never shared with family. They knew they were safe, and they knew the group around them would understand. As the flight drew closer, the guardians were ready. We've prepared, we've packed for any contingency. The veterans were like kids on Christmas, some even arriving at 4 a.m. for our 6:30 flight. Bob and I both arrived around 5:15 for our 5:30 check-in time so we could get to our bus assignments and photo keepsakes. Local soldiers from Fort Custer, police officers, and the airport fire crew were among the numerous local community members who arrived to see us off. We boarded our plane to a hero's departure. As we landed, we are welcomed to DC with a water cannon salute by the airport fire brigade and a large crowd of Honor Flight supporters welcoming the veterans to DC. Our itinerary was a whirlwind. We had very little time at each of our first stops. Our tour guide was impressive, giving us background on each of the memorials and monuments, as well as DC history. Our first stop, the Pentagon Memorial, a tribute to those who lost their lives in the 9/11 Pentagon terror attack. Benches are aligned so that the names facing the Pentagon are those who died inside the building, and benches aligned so the names facing the sky symbolize those who lost their lives on the plane. The youngest, a 3-year-old, who was on the plane, is the first bench you approach as they continue by year of birth. While taking in all the benches and the surreal feeling of standing on a site less than 2 decades ago was the site of one of the worst terror attacks in history, Bob stood in silence, looking over the benches, before finally pointing out to me the difference in the bricks on the Pentagon that laid out where the plane crashed into the building. And with that, we were off to our next stop. A photograph taken in 1945 would inspire the Marine Corps Memorial, dedicated in 1954. The iconic Iwo Jima flag raising serves as a tribute to all Marine Corps personnel who have dedicated their lives in defense of the United States. Here we would take our huge group photo with all 80-plus of our veterans, and a second with the guardians and vets together. Bob, on the left side of the group, proudly took his position among his peers. Next, we traveled to the Air Force Memorial, unveiled in 2006. It features 3 spires ranging in height from 207 to 270 feet, performing the Thunderbird bomb formation. Additionally, there are bronze statues and inscriptions of the names of Air Force recipients of the Medal of Honor. Bob spent a lot of time admiring the spires and the memorial of his chosen branch. He was quiet, yet proud. Under a time crunch, we swiftly headed to my favorite stop on the tour by far. We arrived at Arlington National Cemetery to witness the changing of the honor guard at the tomb of the unknown soldier. One of our veterans and a fellow churchgoer of Bob's is Jim Bob, who was a member of the Honor Guard during his time in the service, and he gave us some insight on what it takes to be a member of the Honor Guard. While on duty, you are silent, vigilant, 21 steps from one end to the other, turning to face the tomb and pausing for 21 seconds, then turning back and heading to the other side. Once you're in uniform, you are unable to sit so that the creases in your pants are meticulously maintained. Medals on their jackets are within 1/64th of an inch of perfection. During the changing of the guard, what sounds like a mistake is a salute to the veterans that were surrounding the tomb watching this ceremony. A simple scuff of the heel was all it took for two soldiers to acknowledge one another. It was somber, silent, visually stunning, and very humbling to witness these men operate with such precision. Many people commented that we could have stayed and watched the Sentinel pace perfectly for the rest of the day. Despite our police escort through Arlington and DC, we were on a tight schedule, passing only to stop and see the Navy Memorial without getting off the bus, so that we had time to take in all the majesty of our next stop, the National Mall. Arriving on the Mall, we were dropped at the World War II Memorial, dedicated in 2004. It features 56 granite pillars for each of the 48 states, District of Columbia, Alaskan and Hawaiian territories, the Philippines, Puerto Rico, Guam, American Samoa, and the U.S. Virgin Islands. Bob didn't want to spend a ton of time here. The memorial he was most interested in was the memorial of his war, the Korean War Memorial. 19 soldiers in 1950s-era military gear are positioned among the granite and juniper to symbolize the Korean terrain, and they're adorned around the triangular monument. Along a granite wall, one can see sandblasted images from the war, and in the reflection of the granite, you can see all 19 of the statues. The soldier statues and their reflections equal 38 soldiers to represent the 38 months of combat and the 38th parallel that divides North and South Korea. As Bob stood looking over the monument, I could tell he was in awe of the sight. He had memories of a moment in history that is slowly beginning to fade to the ravages of time. It was important to him to see this, and it is important for it to be seen, so that those who fought in the Forgotten War, wedged between two other wars that brought a nation together, then ripped it apart, would never be forgotten. This was Bob's moment. His monument, a pivotal point in the history of his life. Before Sally, before Fort Custer, there was the DMZ and a small room on top of a hill where he stared into a scope, most likely torn between the joy of nothing happening and the hoping for some unknown aircraft to cross his scope so that he could be sprung into action. He saw a little of himself in those soldiers and knew in that moment he'd be remembered forever, if not in likeness, in contribution to the efforts in Korea. As we walked away from the memorial, we sat at a bench in the shade, not saying a word, and we didn't need to. After about 30 minutes of reflection, Bob decides to walk over to the Vietnam Memorial. As we cross in front of the Lincoln Memorial and move to an era of national turmoil, Bob looks on the granite walls adorned with 58,320 names, arranged in chronological order by the date they incurred injury or died. We were warned that this wall is the site of many of the veterans on honor flight trips finally break down and let forth all of their emotions. Bob remained stoic, silently reviewing the names with respect. After passing by the 140 panels, we returned to the bus for our final stop. Rounding out our trip was a stop at the FDR Memorial. Dedicated in 1997, it is the only presidential memorial in D.C. that features both the First Lady and the President's dog. It features four sections, each representing a period during FDR's four terms as president. This seven-acre memorial is a stark contrast from the wishes and original FDR Memorial, which sits outside the Archives Building. Roosevelt wanted a small, nondescript memorial, no bigger than his desk. His wish was granted and remained the FDR Memorial until this shrine to one of the greatest presidents in history was built. Our time had ended in D.C., but the surprises weren't done for Bob and our veterans. On the flight home, there was one final mail call. Each veteran received a packet of letters, pictures, and thank you cards from students, supporters, and others who wished to thank them for their service. This was only the penultimate surprise, though. Once we were on the ground, one last thank you was in order. It was one that would bring even the toughest soldiers to tears. Some of these veterans, especially the Vietnam veterans, did not get the proper welcome home. Talon's Out Honor Flight made sure to change that. Our welcome home took us to Wing Stadium in Kalamazoo, where members of the police and fire departments created a blue line saluting the veterans. Portage and Kalamazoo fire departments raised their ladder trucks and draped a massive flag above the entrance to a proper welcome home. Handshakes, hugs, and welcome home wishes lined the concourse of the arena. A proper welcome. One special welcome awaited my wingman. His beautiful bride named Sally waited for Bob, ready with a kiss for her returning hero. Bob Berger is a quiet, humble man. Whenever someone would welcome him home or thank him for his service, he had the same response. Thank you, and thank you for caring. We do care, Bob. And that is all the thanks to you and the brave men and women who have sacrificed for this nation. If you'd like to participate in the Talons Out Honor Flight program as a veteran, volunteer, or guardian, visit talonsouthonorflight.org.